21 supervisors present, that is a quorum. I will call us to order and invite those who choose to join us in reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. Good evening and welcome to the February 11th meeting of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. I'm going to start with a couple of announcements that Supervisor Doyle has asked me to let everyone know that the reason he's not here this evening is that he is with his daughter, who is in Meritor Hospital down in Madison. She has meningitis and was taken by ambulance there on Saturday. She seems to be improving over the past 36 hours or so. They are hopeful that she will be out of intensive care maybe as we speak, if not by tomorrow. And he obviously sends his regrets, but we definitely, I'm sure that I speak for all of us when we know that he is in the right place right now, tending to her needs. So our thoughts and prayers to the Doyle family. I would also note that we have a very full agenda, and when I say that from the front of the room, I'm not trying to, I'm not implying anything. I'm just reminding us that we have a full agenda, especially for a planning meeting this evening. So encourage everyone to be mindful of that. And with that, I will lead off as briefly as I can, but a very important photo opportunity that we have. Is Hank here? Oh, I see his hairline in the back of the room. Hank, if you would come forward, and Steve, you have the plaque right at the podium. We have some great news to share. Gunderson Lutheran, I'm just going to read from the announcement. Oh, there's a lovely picture of Nick Nichols and other recipients in Washington that Gunderson Lutheran Health System and La Crosse County won the Environmental Protection Agency 2012 Project of the Year for landfill biogas, electricity, and heat generation project. The partners were La Crosse County Solid Waste Department, Gunderson Health System, and they received national recognition for this program at an award ceremony in Baltimore, Maryland. The Project of the Year was presented during their 16th annual LMOP conference, which means something to Nick Nichols, but to nobody else in our in our gathering. But national recognition for what we knew locally to be a wonderful, innovative project. I don't know, Hank, if you want to say anything else about it. He's ready for the photo op. We probably have nobody taking pictures. But we wanted to be sure to recognize. Oh, there we go. Thank you, Supervisor Ebert. Do you want me to vamp a little bit here? So much for the brevity of the announcements being made. But it is the gas provided, as you know, that comes off of the landfill is being channeled. I'm using layman's terms here because I don't want Hank to describe it in detail or we will be here all night. But Gunderson Lutheran is using that, what used to be just a flare, to heat and power some or all of their clinic out in Onalaska. Just a truly innovative program, and we are very excited and incredibly proud of our solid waste department, starting with Hank and Nick Nichols, who is the project director for that. So congratulations, well-deserved national recognition.
We also should recognize Jad Stillwell, who in the solid waste department spends a lion's share of his time helping to regulate the operation. So those three individuals are really the key from our staff that have worked on that, as well as, of course, Dave Lang, who worked a lot on the original agreement and putting that together. So
thank you. Are there other supervisor conference reports or announcements? Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Willa McKenzie. She is the full-time Western Technical College instructor in our jail, and she assists the inmates there with the GED and the high school equivalency exam and degrees that they can receive and other testing placements. And she was selected as the 2013 Wisconsin Correctional Teacher of the Year. And we thank her for her dedication. We thank her for all of the work that she does and helping with our transitioning from jail to community program and other programs. So a thank you to her. And then also congratulations to Supervisor Holtz. I think he was selected as the Restaurateur of the Year. Is that correct?
Restaurant Operator of the Year, although I retired a year and a half ago.
Yes. So congratulations to him as well.
Thank you, Supervisor Burke. Other announcements or reports? Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A number of County Board Supervisors, Supervisor Ebert, Schrader, Tara Johnson, myself, and some other county staff members went to the WCA Legislative Exchange in Madison last week. We all agreed it was unusually informative and interesting. I had a long presentation planned, but since we are on a short schedule tonight, maybe we'll leave that until the board meeting next time around. But there were some excellent presentations.
Thank you, Supervisor Cruz. Other announcements or reports? Supervisor Holtz.
I have a report from the County Ambassador meeting on January 23rd. I have a written copy of the report to the chair, so I'll maybe skip over it and just mention that we had five items that we took to the legislators. One was the county tax rate limits, which basically were hit twice. We're hit with the levy limits, but then we're also hit with the 1992 levy limits, which are beyond what anybody else is held to, so we're asking that to be gotten rid of. Funding for the enhanced 911. They've got some suggestions as to how to finance it with using different methods. I won't go into the details yet. State highway maintenance is another item. That was, although the state owns the highways, all 72 counties tend to do all the maintenance on them, and the budget to allow them to complete that has been shrinking so much lately that they're asking, and the Wisconsin DOT realizes the problem because they've requested in their budget for the 2013-15 cycle to first $5 million to be added to the pot in 14 and $50 million in 15, which would get us back up to the level that would at least be close to meeting our needs or what it used to be at. So that's a big item. The other one on county transportation, general transportation aids, we used to be in 1997, we were at 30% of the funding for necessary costs. We're all the way down to 18.2%. And one of the biggest problems, it keeps shrinking, and if it continues, our roads are starting to show it already, and the only solution to this loss of state revenue is the property taxpayer, which is totally not acceptable, especially when the state tells us we can't raise property taxes. So we've asked them to stop making cuts, first priority, and to work towards getting us back up to the 30% that we were at in 1998. And the last item we had was county land conservation staffing and cost sharing. Basically, that program is another one. It was the necessary funding level is considered $9.3 million. We're down to $7.7 million. You'll recall at budget time that the PR and D committee tentative at least reviewed the possibility of taking 50 cents from the $7.50 that farmers receive for meeting all the conservation things, and that was to offset some of the staff we potentially would lose on this. And unless we turn it around, we will start losing it, and our conservation will suffer on that very much. So those are some of the items. Anyone has any questions, see me after the meeting. I'll be glad to talk more about it.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Holtz. I have a copy of it, and I would hold it up in front of the class and give Supervisor Holtz a gold star. Because, you are the latest in a long line of County Board Supervisors and staff from La Crosse County who have done a great job representing this county and being ambassadors for the county's association. And writing a written report in follow-up is impressive, Dave. So thank you very much for that. And if anyone wants to see a copy of it, there's one here this evening. So thank you for representing La Crosse County in the Ambassadors Program. Other supervisors with conference reports or announcements? If not, I'm going to pass it over to Mr. O'Malley to do the introduction for Western Wisconsin Cares.
Great, thank you. Many supervisors have been here for a long time and know about the care management organization and how it evolved into becoming what we now know as the Western Wisconsin Cares District, while many of the board members weren't here at that time. La Crosse County was proud to be one of the five pilots in the state piloting family care and its expansion within each of the counties back in, I believe it was 1999 or 2000 when it started. And this particular program really has helped to save a great deal of property tax money in this county. It's also done quite a bit to reduce and eliminate waiting lists for people that need long-term care to be able to stay in the least restrictive setting. And it grew from basically no employees when the program started to 140 by 2008. And then in 2008, we actually worked with our surrounding seven other counties to create the Western Wisconsin Cares District that now is a separate public entity, no longer a part of the county, but obviously uniquely partnered with us on meeting the needs of community members and people in the need of long-term care. So by way of introduction, I wanted to give you very quickly that, but Tim Garrity, I'm going to ask to come forward. He's the executive director of Western Wisconsin Cares and serves the board of directors. He's going to educate us on how things are going right now and give you a little bit more of the Western Wisconsin Cares 101. But we realized when we put this on your agenda, there's about half of the board members weren't here when this was a county operation. And I'm hopeful that you'll see the vital importance of Western Wisconsin Cares services and that this agenda item is actually linked to the next agenda item and linked to the next agenda item. All three of these items are very clearly related, and I just, by way of introduction, was actually here when we hired Tim Garrity as the director, and then eventually he was retained, obviously, as the director of the regional entity now known as Western Wisconsin Cares.
So after that long introduction, Tim, is there anything left to say?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, okay, just checking. We're all ears, though.
Great. Oh, sure. I'm sorry. So again, I'm Tim Garrity. I'm the executive director at Western Wisconsin Cares. Western Wisconsin Cares is a public long-term care district that provides the family care benefit to eligible folks who have physical or developmental disabilities or are frail elders in an eight-county region, including La Crosse. When you think of sort of the 30,000-foot flyover as in terms of what we do, there were four basic goals of the family care program, and the family care program for the most part replace the county waiver system in the counties that family care is offered. The four goals basically were choice. So one of the effects of family care is that institutional care has gone down dramatically. Folks are able to stay in the community much longer than they would have been prior to family care. Another goal was access. So in many situations there were waiting lists. In a lot of counties there was about 12,000 people on the waiting list in the state of Wisconsin when family care rolled out to most of the state. That list has been eliminated, so there, at this point there aren't any folks on the wait list. Quality was another goal of family care. Quality prior to family care was really a compliance-based activity, so state surveyors would go into facilities and check off boxes on whether files look good and the food was stored appropriately, etc. And a lot of that still happens, but what we've been able to add is really a focus on our members' outcomes being met. So if we're purchasing a service from a vendor, we have about 900 vendors in our eight-county region, our focus is really on what's happening for that individual member who's receiving the service. Then the last and always important piece is could the system be transformed for long-term care in a way that was cost-effective and sustainable? For the most part, that's happened. There's been some fits and starts along the way, which we'll talk about in a minute. I should have said this. If you have questions at any time, please feel free to just ask them. Very brief family care history. Steve kind of stole this thunder for me. La Crosse was one of the five pilot counties that piloted family care starting in 2000. The idea was, rather than roll it out statewide and see what happened, let's find five counties that were pretty much representative of four that were representative of the rest of the state. And then Milwaukee's always its own set of challenges, so they had a pilot as well. From 2000 to 2007, the state studied the effects of family care and what was happening relative to the four goals I started with. And based on the success of the program, there was a decision made to roll it out statewide starting in 2006 or so. There was a planning period, and Western Wisconsin Cares became its own entity October of 2008. We serve, again, folks with disabilities, physical and developmental, and frail elders. Family care really combines what was the county waiver services, so community-based services like residential, supportive home care. Am I not coming through? Supportive home care, is that better? those kind of services with some medical assistance card services. Those are the more health-related services, nursing home, personal care, that kind of thing. A brief WWC history. In winter of 2006, the West Central Consortium was founded. That included Buffalo, Jackson, La Crosse, Monroe, Trempealeau, and Vernon counties. And then the management group out of La Crosse really coordinated the services. In spring of 2007, Pepin and Clark counties joined the West Central Consortium. Those two northern counties were really able to choose between the entity, which was a private entity to the north, in Eau Claire, centered in Eau Claire County, and the much more public entity to the south, which became Western Wisconsin Cares. As you'll hear in a minute, that was a good choice on their part. Again, like I said, October 1st, 2008, Western Wisconsin Cares became its own entity. If you boil family care down to its most basic components, I always describe it as there's three sort of interrelated legs of a stool. The first is the Aging and Disability Resource Center. Those are run by the counties, so we have one here. The role of the Aging and Disability Resource Center is they do a lot of other things. Relative to family care, it's to help folks who potentially need service to determine whether they're functionally eligible or not. So the first door one needs to get through to be eligible for family care is you have to qualify as a member of one of those three target groups, physically, developmentally disabled, or frail elders. And ADRCs help community members determine if they're eligible functionally. The MCO, which is Western Wisconsin Cares, is the second leg of the stool. And as I said, we provide the services to the folks once they're in the program. The third leg of the stool is the Economic Support Department. Again, each county operates that. It's gone to a consortium model now, and all eight of the counties that we serve are part of the Western Region, Western Region for Economic Assistance, WREA. La Crosse County is the lead agency on that. Economic Support manages financial eligibility for our members. Essentially, to be eligible for family care, there are some exceptions, but as a general rule, you have to be eligible for medical assistance, and that's an income-based program generally, and economic support departments make sure our members remain eligible or are initially eligible. One of the important pieces that made family care attractive to the state system was the way family care is funded relative to the waiver system. Family care, we are a contract provider, essentially, of the Department of Health Services, and we're 100% Medicaid funded. As you probably know, Medicaid is a shared state-federal program. About state administers the benefit package, and then the feds reimburse about 58 cents in Wisconsin for every dollar, so it's about a 58-42 shared program. There are no local property tax dollars in any family care model in the state of Wisconsin, so it's 100% funded by Medicaid. Our revenue at Western Wisconsin Cares is generated on a per-member, per-month basis, which is similar to a private insurance model that you might be familiar with. So for every member in our program, we receive a capitated 1/12 payment for their membership to cover the benefits and services they receive. One of the challenges of the work that I do is that capitated model changes annually. So in the other settings that I've worked in the past, it went up slightly, down slightly. As those who are familiar with can attest, our rate bounces around year to year all the time. We've taken up to a 5% cut. We've taken a slight increase, that kind of thing. So that's one of the challenges. I think I'll stop and just ask if there's any questions so far. That's kind of family care in a nutshell. No. Okay.
Either they're all asleep or you're on a roll.
Right. go ahead. Okay. where we're at right now in 2013, The original challenge for all the family care districts that started in that 2008-2009 period was that the projections would be that family care would pull out about 15% of the former costs of the county waiver system. So for every dollar, get that cost down to 85% in the aggregate. Western Wisconsin Cares was able to do that in the 2008-2009 period. And our current challenge now is that we're sort of in a period of our members, as they get older and their needs change, they're becoming more acute, so their care needs are higher, and our rate isn't necessarily going up to match that increase in our care needs. So if you think of a frail elder as an example, they come into our program when they become that target group, and over time as they age, their needs and their health becomes more frail, and so their costs go up. So we're in a constant debate with the Department of Health Services on what that actual rate should be in order to match the acuity of our population. That is really the challenge of family care statewide, and recently the MCO to our north, it's Community Health Partnerships, it served five counties, Chippewa, Dunn, Eau Claire, Barron, and what's the fifth one? Menominee was the fifth one. They experience significant financial stress. Their acuity that I just talked about did not match their rate. As a result, they closed operations January of this year. They were not offered, and nor did they seek a contract for the next five-year period. What the state has done is asked another or bid out, and another MCO has gone up to that area to try to make things work. The MCO that replaced CHP is a public entity. CHP was a private entity. So there's a clear split in the state between the success of the more public entities versus the private entities. And that you can see that statewide. In terms of current status at Western Wisconsin Cares, when we started as our own entity, we had about 1,800 members. They were all La Crosse County members at that time. As of January, we're at about 4,000 members, so we've more than doubled in size. Steve said we had about 140 employees when we started. We're at approximately 280 employees now, so we've roughly doubled in size. Our budget, and about 85 cents of every dollar is spent for goods and services for our members in the community. 15 is spent for everything else, and that's different than a lot of a school district, for example, that spends the bulk of their dollars on staff salaries and those kind of things. Almost all of our 85 cents of every dollar in our model goes out to vendors, providers, etc. In some of our smaller communities, we're one of the main engines of economic growth. You know, most of the agencies that provide the kind of services we purchase, we would be by far their primary purchaser. About $125 million budget. The one thing where I'll stop and toot our horn for a second is the state audits us on quality measures every year. So they set standards, and then they measure us against that. So it's about a week-long exhaustive process. In the history of family care, so from 2000 to 2013, no MCO had ever met 100% of the quality compliance standards until we did it at Western Wisconsin Cares last year. So that's my one commercial. We are the only MCO in the history of the state to do 100% compliance with our program and the way we deliver care to our members. Challenges of the last brief year, if you were following the state budget last year, in the 11-13 biennium, the budget put a cap on our family care enrollment. They said where you are right now with enrollment, that's where you'll be for the next period. Then they took it off in about 4 months, and so there was a big backlog of people who had become eligible for service in that time, and we had a rush of enrollments that were very challenging to manage. As I said earlier, the primary challenge in family care is getting the rate right to match the needs of your population. And in 2013, we're working our way through a relatively about a 2% rate cut from 2012. So that equates to about $3 million less revenue that we'll have for the same population, which I find interesting just as an aside. The last issue that we're addressing in the 12-13 period is the Department of Health Services has set as a goal that every district, every area of the state that provides family care will have more than one MCO operating in it. And as a result, we will have a competitive organization in our district somewhere in the between first and second quarter of 2013. One of the private entities from the Madison area bid on our eight counties, and that bid was accepted, so they'll be starting in sometime in 2013. As far as the state budget, we're always very, as you are, interested in what's going on in the state budget. The primary thing that affects family care is there's 15 counties left in the state that are not able to offer this benefit. They were sort of caught in the cap lift, cap on, cap off kind of thing. And so our state association is really making a push to expand the program statewide. It's been shown unequivocally at this point to be much more cost effective than the system it replaced, and it's really just a matter of getting their upfront planning dollars out to the system to be able to do that. So that'll be the big push in the Medicaid budget from the family care perspective. And then I put question mark after Medicaid budget. There's always a surprise or two in the Medicaid budget once it's rolled out. So hopefully none of that will impact family care directly.
Supervisor Veenstra, did you have a question?
Yeah, just a real quick one.
Sure.
I was curious, how are the vendors audited, or do the actual customers have an opportunity to comment or provide feedback or anything like that?
Yes, we do a annual member satisfaction survey that looks at provider relationships, their relationship with our care teams, lots of different areas. So that's a piece of how we manage provider quality. We also have a provider network department that we don't audit all 900 providers every year, but we do a sample of audits every year. If we find something, obviously we would go deeper with that particular provider. And then many of our providers are certified or licensed by the state, so they're doing that quality piece as well. Any statements of deficiencies or corrective action plans that the state assigns to a provider, we have access to as well.
Did that answer your question, Jay? Supervisor Schultz, can you use your microphone, please, because it gets picked up.
Do you have any idea what the private entity that's going to come in and the private competitor, do you have any idea what kind of effect that's going to have on your program or membership or anything like that?
Yep, good question. The eastern side of the state has had multiple MCOs in the same area for several years. So we can only go by that experience. We're not really sure statewide what will happen in rural areas, La Crosse being our most urban by far, but if you think about Vernon County, you know, a lot more corn than people. So we're not sure what will happen in the more rural areas. What's happened in the urban areas is the second MCO, the new MCO that comes in, experiences what's called adverse selection. So everyone who's unhappy with Western Wisconsin Care says, well, the grass must be greener over there, and disenrolls and signs up with the new MCO. That shakes itself out over time. So in a 2 to 3 year period, that really shakes itself out. It's typically not that much greener. We're all operating with the same contract and expectations. It has taken a very long time for the MCOs on the other side of the state to ramp up the new ones to a manageable number of members. So the impact has been relatively little so far on the smaller MCOs. Again, in a rural area, that we'll be learning about that as we go. Thank you.
Any other questions for Tim? They took my opening comment to heart, obviously. Seeing none, thank you very much for giving us an update on Western Wisconsin Cares. And that takes us to Veterans, Aging, and Long-Term Care. Supervisor Plesha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Resolution 2-1 regarding support of Wisconsin's acceptance of federal funding to expand coverage for the state Medicaid program, Badger Care, and guaranteeing coverage to low-income adults. Whereas the state of Wisconsin agrees to accept medical assistance funding available through the U.S. Affordable Care Act, it would get $12 billion to fill the holes in Badger Care over the next 10 years. For the state, or about $240 million for the La Crosse County residents. Now, therefore, it be resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby encourage Governor Walker, Senator Schilling, and Representative Billing and Doyle, and the Wisconsin Counties Association to support the $12 billion expansion of Medicaid Badger Care under the new health care law. Be it further resolved, a copy of this resolution be mailed to Governor Walker, Senator Schilling, Representatives Billings and Doyle, and the Wisconsin Counties Association. Fiscal note, there is no cost to La Crosse County, and the acceptance of medical assistance funding will have a positive impact on the outlined in this resolution. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Hampson. Discussion? Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a press conference upstairs in the lobby last week. There were several press conferences organized across the state, and ours was led by our esteemed colleague, Monica Cruz, who told the governor to take the money, dude. And all those people went to Madison the next day and encouraged him to take the Medicaid expansion money. The point is that Wisconsin would benefit by taking this money because we already have so many people covered under Badger Care. So if we got federal money, that would support our program and save us money. And that $240 million figure in the first whereas is the amount of money that the county would have to make up by paying for people who are uninsured. So it's a burden that's passed on to the county. This is something that the American Hospital Association, the American Medical Association support, and I realize it puts our Republican governor in a tough political spot, but I think it's for the benefit of the state that that this becomes part of the governor's budget, and I hope that we can have some influence on that. Thank you.
Other discussion on the resolution? Supervisor Holtz.
Yes, the governor took a political position on this way before the law was certified by the Supreme Court that it was going to hold up the Affordable Care Act. Other Republican governors have done the same thing. However, they have realized that they're hurting only their own people by turning this down. I mean, Michigan, Schneider has just said that he's not going to support it. Ohio now supports it. So there's a number of Republican governors lining up, even though they don't like the idea, that they like the money. And we're suggesting that Governor Walker take the money also.
Other discussion on the resolution? Supervisor Berg.
Yeah, as Milton Friedman pointed out many years ago, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And what happens with the funding for the federal funding of Medicare is that it's 100% for the first 3 years, and then it's decreased to 95%. So in the meantime, the states have to expand their Medicaid rolls to cover people who are at 400% of the poverty level. So the question that raises itself is the cost to the states of insuring those additional people at the lower rate after the 3 years, equal to the amount of money that they get. The other factor is, of course, that no Congress can bind a succeeding Congress, and the United States government is now almost a little over $16 trillion in debt. In fiscal 2011, 77% of that debt was bought by the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve System is committed to buying $40 billion a month in U.S. long-term U.S. Treasuries and $45 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities, meaning that they're creating $1 trillion a year out of thin air. This financial arrangement will not be sustainable in the long term, and the state's going to be left holding the bag. So I would say we don't take the money because we'll end up expanding our Medicaid rolls and then be stuck with the cost of having done so.
Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you. I'd like to clear up a couple of misconceptions. One being that if we don't take the money, somehow it is not going to be spent on Medicaid, which is false, because this money is available, and if we don't take the money, someone else will. This money is going to be allocated. Secondly, we are not talking about 400% of poverty level of the affected demographic, but rather 138% of poverty level. And that means $15,000 a year for an individual and $24,000 a year for a family of three. These are adults between the ages of 18 and 64, so if they're not eligible for Medicare, they would be they would be eligible for this money. These people tend to not be insured and not get medical care until their illnesses become acute. They go to the emergency room. They don't have funds to pay for it, but emergency rooms have to take them, and the rest of us end up paying for that medical care at much higher rates. So in the long run, this would actually be much more cost-effective than allowing those people to go to the emergency room.
Other discussion? Any first-time speakers before I call on a supervisor for a second time? Any other first-time speakers? Back to you, Supervisor Berg.
Yeah, in La Crosse County, at least, the chief source of uncompensated care is not patients who come to the emergency room and don't pay anything. In fact, they represent less than 2% of Gunderson's uncompensated care, if I remember correctly. The biggest source of uncompensated care is Medicare and Medicaid underpayments. So what happened in Massachusetts when they passed the Romney Care Law was that Boston General Hospital, which had run in the black since its inception, suddenly started running through its endowment and, in fact, sued the state for Medicaid underpayments. So our biggest an expansion of the Medicaid rolls would not help any of the local providers. It would hurt us because we can't make up in volume what you lose on every unit. So that switching from uncompensated care to Medicaid is actually a bad thing for us. That's what happened to Massachusetts General Hospital. They actually ended up losing money for the first time with an expansion of insurance.
Supervisor Veenstra.
I'm loath to disagree with someone who's a doctor about the provision of medical care and medical care financing. However, I would simply point out the fact that the Wisconsin Hospitals Association and the American Hospitals Association both support the expansion as indicated, and they must be doing so for a very good reason.
We're going to be voting on the computer on this one. Any other discussion? So if you are in favor of the resolution, your vote would be yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Again, on the computer. He's in the back row. It takes longer to get back there, I think. The resolution is approved on a 20-1 vote. Is that it for you, Supervisor Plesha?
Yes.
Thank you. That takes us back over to Mr. O'Malley and the Administrator's Report.
Yes, I have a proclamation, Madam Chair, members of the Board. February 2013, Public Health Month. Whereas the mission of La Crosse County Health Department is to protect, promote, and improve the health of all people in the county, and the Health Department is made up of 75 full and part-time staff representing 13 different public health professions, encouraging residents to be living in one of the healthiest counties in the state, and providing resident services in 35 different program areas. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of February as Public Health Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of Health Department staff.
Is there a motion to approve the proclamation? Moved by Supervisor Cruz, seconded by Supervisor Schultz. Discussion on the proclamation. All those in favor of its approval signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That proclamation is approved. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Yes, this evening, and the main subject of the agenda tonight is a preliminary report of some of the pieces of the Lakeview Strategic Care financial model and the planning, both a market analysis, an operational analysis, and finally some preliminary results on the right sizing of Lakeview Healthcare Center. This will not get into issues of site selection or some of the final decisions on what the right sizing will be, but we spent Chairman Plesha close to an hour, I think, at this morning's meeting with the Veterans Aging Long-Term Care Committee. We're hoping that this presentation will be a little bit shorter than that, but we want the full county board to know some of the ramifications of the market, improvements in operations, and some of the ramifications of what it looks like the best choices are for right sizing. There's a lot of information here, then in March we'll be coming back with refinements of that based on staff work with the consultants, including a number of site tours on what the facility might look like or facilities might look like. And with that, I think we're starting out with Mike. Is that correct? Mike Edwin from Whifley and Associates, and then we're going to also have Larry Lester from Whifley. So welcome, Mike. That's your introduction to the county board.
Great. Thank you.
Did he steal any of your thunder, Mike?
No, actually.
Okay, good.
You did a good job.
Hopefully that little corrective statement earlier changed that. There you go. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Are you going to run? Thank you. Okay, very good. Except I can't go backwards now. That's okay. The first page didn't really matter anyway. So can you escape out of that for me so that little box disappears? Appreciate that. Okay, so Larry and I are from Whipley LLP. We're a accounting firm. Larry's out of our Eau Claire office. I happen to be located in our Oak Brook, Illinois office, just moved there in September. We were asked to do several assessments, as Steve alluded to, and we're going to do a real brief overview of some of it, particularly on the market and an operational assessment piece. I'm going to breeze through that so that Larry can talk more about the financial aspects of this project, which is kind of the bottom line, I think, what you'll probably be quite interested in. I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about what is Lakeview, what are the programs and services that are offered on the campus in West Salem. We don't want to assume that everybody knows every little thing about that facility, the facilities out there, so just wanted to run it down for you. Lakeview Health Center, otherwise called the Nursing Home, which you will see throughout the rest of the presentation, is a 125-bed skilled nursing facility for persons that are behaviorally challenged, mentally ill, and have other special needs, and are also qualified for skilled nursing care. Lakeview Health Center FDD, or Facility for the Developmentally Disabled, sometimes called an ICFMR, is a 7-bed nursing home for persons with developmental disabilities, of all ages, by the way, not just elderly. Ravenwood Behavioral Health is a 10-bed, state-only nursing home for the behaviorally challenged. This particular nursing home is a separate nursing home licensed from Lakeview Health Center. It is contracted. Each person has a contract with the county that they are from for the types of services that they need. And these folks are very behaviorally challenged, need very specialized care. Maplewood CBRF is a 14-bed community-based residential facility, otherwise known as assisted living, for the behaviorally challenged individuals as well, including elderly. These folks would be considered a step down in terms of acuity from the nursing home, and a couple steps down potentially from some of the people that would be in the behavior unit at Ravenwood. McIntosh Manor and Regent Manor are both 4-bed adult family homes, also a type of assisted living, but they are maxed out at 4 beds. You cannot go any larger than that. And these are also for persons with developmental and intellectual disabilities, typically a step down even from the CBRF. So these folks are a little more independent. Some would have higher acuities or lower acuities than you'd find in a CBRF, but generally speaking, are able to be in a smaller setting with a person that is a caregiver for 24 hours a day, but does not need that extra level of care in a skilled nursing for certain. And finally, Whispering Pines which Lakeview Management provides the skill or the assisted living services. Lakeview staff provides through a contract. However, La Crosse County does not own the building or manage the building. It is a what's called residential care apartment complex, which is also assisted living. And that is a very different population than what we're talking about primarily at Lakeview. Okay, so what are we going to talk about tonight? I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the market study, a little bit on population and demographics, turn it over at that point to Larry, and he's going to have the rest of the responsibility tonight. Property incentive overview, project size assumptions, Medicaid rate impacts, estimated construction cost, debt service, financial analysis, some assumptions, and then the bottom line results of what we did. So in terms of the market study, what did we do? First of all, we surveyed management staff at Lakeview, which was a combination of all the different operating units out there, including the folks that would manage the RCAC. We did talk with them about their thoughts on what the future of Lakeview would be and asked them specific questions about the demand for services going forward, as well as questions around what challenges do they see in that current physical plant and what opportunities would there be for potential changes to the physical plant and operations. We also did a survey of the human services directors for each of the MVHS commission counties. That survey was very different, is very specific on several areas, such as making a commitment other than the per diem to Lakeview Health Center, whether it be capital costs, help with capital costs, or paying for a bed hold, or some other questions. Asked about future utilization and demand. Do they anticipate that changing? Why is the utilization decreased at Lakeview and the options there? And a few other very pointed questions around operational challenges at Lakeview. We then conducted what we call a competitive market assessment. We wanted to know, is there any other facilities like Lakeview out there? We know Lakeview, Ravenwood, and Maplewood are very unique programs in the state. There are very few like it throughout the state. And the competitive market assessment did determine that as well. We did do a nursing home bed need assessment. We conducted through a contracted firm, Pat Boyer and Associates, a higher level operational assessment. She did a review of 25 client chart or resident charts for the purpose of determining how many folks do we think would be at Lakeview that could potentially transfer to a lower acuity setting, such as a CBRF for an adult family home, trying to determine the right size of the Lakeview Health Center itself, as well as the CBRF and the adult family homes. And she also looked at whether the FDD really needed to be operated going forward, or could those folks be adequately cared for in another setting. Those are the two primary roles of her assessments at this time. And finally, we did conduct interviews with healthcare providers in the area, the various hospitals you have here, as well as other folks in human services and some other departments within the county, etc. So the bottom line of the market study and operational assessments: there is a need for most of the services provided at Lakeview Health Center, and the term most, or the word most there, will be defined later, so we'll leave that as it is for now. The utilization has declined for various reasons. The four of the common themes that we heard is that there are alternative settings that MVHS commissions or counties are using and other counties throughout the state. There is a commission that started in Clark County, and I think it was 2011 or 2010, and there's been a newer commission started in Dodge County. Although they are not serving near as many counties as you are, and you, as Steve was explaining, you've opened it up to associate members, I believe you call it. Those commissions are not doing that. Yours is unique in the geography as well as in the fact that you will take associate members. The other two commissions are somewhat, if you want to say, competitive for what it is you're doing at Lakeview. The additional daily fee, it was an interesting response when we asked the question. When we need you, we don't mind paying the per diem, but we don't want to pay the per diem. They will find an alternative that doesn't have a per diem. If they can't find it, then they'll gladly come to Lakeview and pay the per diem. It was a unique answer, I thought, to the question, is that a reason you're not using it? It was no and yes at the same time. There has not been an increase in need was a theme that I heard from several different interviews, that at this point in time there's been sort of a flat use across the state of these types of programs. when we just surveyed the directors of the MVHS commission and we asked the question about would you commit additional resources, the overwhelming answer was no. They would not be completely against paying additional per diem if the per diem started to creep up, but they would not commit to additional resources, as I said, paying for a bed hold, which basically means even though we're not admitting one or two people to you today, we're going to pay for those one or two people every day anyway, one or two beds every day anyway. They would not commit to helping you pay for capital. They are not interested in helping you fund the debt service of the building at this point in time. And there was a few other questions we asked about additional resources, and the answer pretty much was overwhelmingly no. A lot of them said not sure, to be maybe politically correct as well, but basically there was no yes answers to those questions. One of the things that did come out of the operational assessment I wanted to point out as an opportunity, both today as well as going forward, to potentially generate more revenue at Lakeview Health Center, the nursing home, is to certify it for Medicare. This doing so would not create a competitive situation to Hillview nor to the other nursing homes in the area. What we found in the interview process as well as in the operational assessment, there are residents there today as well as residents that will be there in the future that could benefit from Medicare-covered therapy services. And as a result of going Medicare certified, you'd be able to do that yourselves, and you could benefit from that additional revenue. Finally, there are multiple residents at the current nursing home, the Lakeview Health Center, that could be adequately placed and appropriately placed in a CBRF setting, which we'll get to a little bit more in a few minutes. So there's two perspectives that Larry is going to expand on as we go forward in the presentation today. One is that you continue to go down the path of being a multi-county provider, whether it's through MVHS commission, an expanded commission, or just as a regional provider of some type. Assuming you're going to remain with the commission and that's going to continue going forward, the assessments overall found, even before Larry started looking at this, that the nursing home, Lakeview Health Center, could be downsized to 90 beds and still meet the potential demand going forward for that level of care. Maplewood CBRF could be expanded to 32 beds. It's currently a 16-bed facility, so an additional 16 beds for that resident population. The FDD, the Facility for the Developmentally Disabled, should be closed and the residents relocated to an 8-bed CBRF setting. The adult family homes could remain unless for some reason you decided you didn't want to do that service. There's no compelling reason not to have those. The RCAC arrangement would not change. And finally, Ravenwood could be maintained at the 10 beds because currently, which Larry will show you later, Ravenwood really is an out-of-county service at this point in time. There's only a couple of La Crosse County residents in that setting. And historically, Ravenwood typically has out-of-county residents in it, and in this setting it could still remain at 10 beds, in this scenario rather. The other perspective is, what if you pull back and say we're only going to focus on, or really going to focus on, serving La Crosse County only? The analysis suggested that the nursing home could be 60 beds or smaller.
Pardon the interruption, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to take questions during the presentation or wait until you're done?
I have one or two more slides, and then I can take a question on this piece of it.
Okay.
Would that be all right?
Yep, that would be great. Thanks.
The assessment suggested that the nursing home could be 60 beds or smaller. Larry will talk later about a 50-bed model for various reasons, which we'll get to. Maplewood CBRF could still remain at and be increased to the 32-bed size because you do have folks in the nursing home that could be adequately cared for in that setting. And generally speaking, we'll see that there is demand for that option going forward. Again, the FDD could be transferred to the 8-bed CBRF. One or two, both adult family homes could remain. Again, because if you want to remain in that, there's no compelling reason to get out of that business right now. And again, to focus on La Crosse County specifically, Ravenwood could be eliminated because that is primarily an out-of-county service at this point in time and has been historically. Okay, so I can take the question now. Questions?
Supervisor Geary.
Back on the La Crosse County only one, what's the requirement to be a La Crosse County resident? If you're living in Jackson County and they're down here, let's say, in a bed and we say we're only serving La Crosse County residents, and their parents, guardians, whoever, say, no, they're going to live in La Crosse County. Does that make them a La Crosse, or do they have to reside here for a year, or what's the requirement?
I think Pam's going to help with the answer. Or Dean. Can you please come up to the mic? Dean, can you please come up to the microphone? Thank you.
I'm Dean Rupert, Deputy Director of Human Services, deal with this a lot. David gets to deal with a lot of questions that come in on this, especially the exceptions. But basically, there's a lot of rules around that. If you're legally competent, it's based upon intent and physical presence. And if those both are concurrent, if you've chosen to live in La Crosse County, you're a La Crosse County resident. If you're placed here by another county, that means typically you're not competent to make those decisions, and you're placed here, not in all cases are you incompetent, then you're a resident of the county that placed you here. So those are the two primary ways that people get to be considered or not considered La Crosse County residents. Lots of exceptions to that, but those are the two primary ways.
Did that answer your question? Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 4, you say it's a 125-bed skilled nursing facility. Does that number include all the ones listed below it?
No.
It does not. So it's 125 plus everything listed.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions for Mike in this portion of the presentation? Seeing none, we'll...
So now all the real fun begins.
Passing to... Larry is the really fun guy.
Yes.
Mike was just the warm-up act.
I'm the one with the coat on, see, and he's got the...
Here comes the really fun part.
Yeah.
All right. My name's Larry Lester. Again, I'm from Whipley. I think that as a county board, there's a couple things you got to understand when we're looking at this information. There are two dynamics happening at the same point in time. One dynamic is La Crosse County's trying to figure out what to do with Lakeview Health Center. The other dynamic is the state's trying to figure out how to get empty beds and how to downsize facilities and what's the right size and how to replace facilities that are aging. So we got those two dynamics that are going on. And when we talk about that, we're going to talk about this property incentive thing that the state has out. And the reality is without the property incentive, I guess the easiest way to sum it up is La Crosse County wouldn't be looking to replace their nursing home without significant dollars coming from the county to do it. So that's why the property incentive piece becomes very important, and like I said, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Getting back to the presentation here, the first thing we did, and obviously as it was mentioned, Lakeview is very unique, and so it's very hard to compare them to other facilities and what's going on in other facilities. So the one thing we did is we took a snapshot in time, because obviously there's census changes and people come and go and all that, and said, okay, at this point in time, what does Lakeview look like today? How many people are they servicing from La Crosse County? What's the payer type? What's that history part? And as on page 10 there, 77 out of the 112 residents that were in Lakeview County on October 22nd were La Crosse County residents, or 69% of the residents that they were serving were La Crosse County residents. So that's kind of the piece there. If we go to slide 11, ooh, works. Out of that population, 86% or 55 plus 41 were either Medicaid or family care. Obviously, we all understand Medicaid financing and the troubles that are the shortfalls in Medicaid financing. So that kind of gives you a picture of, you know, there's 16 out of 112 that are paying privately to be there at Lakeview. Again, then the question was, as Mike mentioned, Pat Boyer's group came in and said, are we caring for people in the appropriate setting? Okay. Again, you got to kind of change your mindset from, okay, this is the facility we have today. We have 125 beds. How do we keep that facility full, to the mindset, if we're going to replace it, what size should it be when we replace it? Okay, well, again, we're not just trying to now fill up empty beds with programs. We're trying to make sure those programs are the ones we need to be. What we found is out of 112 residents, 26 of those could be served in a lesser setting. And obviously, in a lesser setting, we mean a setting that costs less to care for them. That was 23% of the patients that were there. Of those 26, 18 of them were from La Crosse County, or about 69% of those were from La Crosse County. And of those 18, 8 of them were from Western Wisconsin Cares, which you just heard from Tim Garrity in that managed care organization. So that was the data we used when we sat down and said, okay, who should La Crosse County serve and what should they look like? On the property incentive side, to kind of give you a little bit of what the state's looking at, the state has very significant concerns about the baby boomers. Okay, you have a large population of people turning 65, soon going to turn 75, and all but know now they're going to need long-term care, nursing home care. There's a lot of empty nursing home beds in the state of Wisconsin today, okay? And so the idea is well, geez, those empty nursing home beds will just get filled up by the patients as they need them. The problem is the state budget will not support that, okay? There's not enough Medicaid dollars to support that increased growth. So what the state wants to do is they want to try and push that care back into different settings, okay? So take people that are now being serviced in a nursing home, move them back into assisted living. Take people that are in assisted living, maybe move them back into home care, okay? That's their vision. So their goal is to downsize, first of all, is to get the empty nursing home beds out of the state, okay? And then secondly, to incentivize providers to build alternative settings, assisted living and home care, through the to build those support systems. But if you do that, okay, that's the if part of it, they're willing to help you replace your facility by giving you a property incentive, giving you additional dollars to make that happen. Okay? And that's what we're talking about on page 12. The basis of this slide on page 12 is the smaller the facility you build, the more money that they're going to give you to help build it. Okay, on a per bed basis. Okay, so as you're willing to give up more beds and you're willing to build a smaller facility, the reimbursement actually gets better for you, and not just you, for anybody that would apply. So we looked at three options, and really the basis of those three options, in addition to Mike's market study, was the first option we looked at is based on the current property incentive calculation, which isn't finalized yet by the state, so we're kind of still playing with tentative numbers. What is the largest facility La Crosse County could build and qualify for the property incentive? Okay, and the answer for that is 90 beds. Okay, and remember, when we're talking about the property incentive, we're only talking about the nursing home piece. We're not talking about CVRFs, adult family homes, and that stuff. So the largest facility that we could build in La Crosse County and qualify for that additional reimbursement is 90 beds. So that was our large size of the facility. Okay, so that's what option A is, and as it says there, we'd be looking at a 90-bed nursing home, the two 16-bed CBRFs, an 8-bed CBRF, and then maintaining the two adult family homes. That's what we call option A. Okay, option B is, what's the other end of the scale? Okay, what's the other end of the scale, and what do we need to be? And that option really falls around two different things. One, servicing the residents of La Crosse County. We heard 60 beds somewhere in that area, 59 or 60 beds. There's a definite reimbursement benefit to going down to 50 beds. And we'll kind of walk through all those as we get to that point. But the 50-bed threshold, a 50-bed nursing home gets additional incentives that a 51-bed facility doesn't get. And so on the small side, we said, what if we were a 50-bed facility? Again, with the two CBRFs, an 8-bed CBRF, and maintaining the one adult family home, or two, as Mike said. That really, the adult family homes are not really a main part of the whole project at this point, because you're not looking to replace them. They're already in existence, and it's just a matter of, do you continue to operate them or not? So that's option two, or B. And option C is one where we kind of take a little bit of the Dunn County model, I'll say, and they were the first ones to try it, and really tried to say, can we build multiple 50-bed facilities, which gives us both benefits. It gives us the benefit of having a larger organization to share our overhead in, but yet try to capture the reimbursement benefit of being a 50-bed facility, okay? And so in this scenario, we're looking at a 50-bed nursing home and a 40-bed nursing home that would be separately licensed, two different nursing homes, two 16-bed CBRFs, an 8-bed CBRF, and then one or two adult family homes. The key with this one is that right now, if the state, or if you were going to build this and ask for approval, the state does not want or doesn't prefers not to have both of those nursing homes on the same piece of property or contiguous properties, okay? Okay, so they don't want you to build a 40-bed here and a 50-bed there and say, hey, that's two 50-bed facilities, okay? There is an approval process that you can ask them to say, will you approve us as two 50-bed facilities? But it's easier if we can just separate the facilities and avoid having to ask for that approval. So that's the third assumption is what we're looking at there, is that 50-bed and 40-bed facility. Again, really, remember going back to Mike's discussion, the 40-bed really comes into play is if you decide to continue to service residents that aren't from La Crosse County like you are today. Okay, that's really that question you have to ask yourself is, if we're going to continue to do what we're doing today with the MVHS and those non-county residents, then we need that additional facility. I'm going to pause for a little bit there. Any questions?
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to review then, what is the with your analysis, how long are these numbers that would play into our needs immediately, or are these numbers that would meet our needs in the future, and what's the time horizon?
Well, they're what you would meet your needs right now, and again, as from the information we gathered from the market study, there doesn't seem to be a growth in that area, unlike, I'll say, the baby boomer population. So our assumption is based on the data we collected, it would meet your needs into the future also.
Like how far in the future?
That's hard to say. I mean, you know, when we forecast out 5 years, I would say beyond that, for this population, it's hard to tell. But, again, what we're saying is there nobody's saying, boy, we need more of this service. And actually, if you look at Lakeview's census history, it's actually went down. It's actually gone the other direction. So
you describe this industry as stable or declining?
Yes.
Thank you.
And especially in the nursing home world. Again, remember, there's a CBRF and the other alternative settings, too.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you. On page 10, on the county of origin, you had 77 for La Crosse. Could some of those people go to Hillview or a similar facility?
No.
None of them could go to Hillview? And then on the other counties?
They could go to a similar facility like Lakeview, but not a
traditional
nursing.
Okay. On those other counties, do I assume then that that population is not competent to make their own decisions and the county is the placement official or guardian or whatever?
I will defer to Pam on that.
Kind of that question I asked earlier. That
Pam, will you come to the microphone, please?
The vast majority of them are protectively placed, but there are some individuals that are not protectively placed and are competent, but the vast majority are.
Supervisor Veenstra.
I had two questions. Mm-hmm. The first is from page 11, and it sort of shocks me that somebody is telling us that 26 of the 112 nursing home residents are essentially placed inappropriately. Mm-hmm. And if they're in protective placement, they're supposed to be in the least restrictive setting by law, and they're not. Mm-hmm. And that just really is shocking to me. Was there any explanation for, was it just an inertia thing that somebody
needed? It's
actually
a lack of those type of services at the CBRF level. There are not enough services at a CBRF level that can meet those residents' needs like Maplewood is. Okay, so, and Maplewood is 14 beds, typically with a census of 12 or 13, typically almost full. And so that's why you see in our thing, we're saying, not just a 14-bed CBRF at Maplewood, actually 32 beds. That's the piece that's missing right now in your area. And right now, when those beds aren't available at the CBRF level, then they're cared for in the nursing home.
Okay, so it's a lack of beds at a CBRF with appropriate
Can
care.
Meet the residents' needs, yes.
Okay, all right. The other thing I guess that's somewhat surprising, and it piggybacks off Supervisor Burns' question about the future is, given the demographics, even assuming that the state and every other financial pressure is away from skilled nursing home care, it would seem the numbers are just too big to avoid the reality of that, especially with the numbers of Alzheimer's patients that are predicted. And I guess, is there an explanation other than we just can't afford it?
I think the explanation is if you listen to Wisconsin and you actually look at their nursing home utilization per 1,000, we're higher than other states. Again, it's that getting people into the appropriate setting. And where does that end? And, you know, where do the people really need to be in the nursing home? But that's the consensus today, especially in areas that don't have a lot of assisted living or home care services there. Again, people are going to go to where the services are available. That doesn't always mean that's the most cost-effective way to provide those services. And that's what the state is really, I'll say, touting is we have people that are even in assisted living that if there were appropriate home care services there could still get services in their home. So again, think of it as pushing that kind of that bubble back into the assisted living and then in home care. And I mean, nobody knows the ultimate, where does those two kind of balance out?
Other questions of Larry at this point?
All right, then we'll continue on. The next one, Ravenwood. Just the comment on Ravenwood is really think of Ravenwood independent of this project. Again, it really depends on, do you choose to serve those people that are not, you know, the majority of them are not La Crosse County residents. When you look at the numbers for Ravenwood, their direct expenses and their revenue, and if you did debt service on a new building for Ravenwood, individually it actually would support the debt service it would take, so it would cash flow its own part of the project. So again, it really comes back to, do you want to do that for the counties that aren't, you know, for residents that aren't, the majority aren't from La Crosse County? That's really the question when you come into talking about Ravenwood. So I just wanted to point that out because we don't really have that in all the other ones. As we talked about the people being in the appropriate setting, on page 17, one of the things the state does is they reimburse your nursing homes, or all nursing homes in the state, based on the acuity of the residents that are in that building at a point in time. The one thing that actually came out of our study that's kind of hurting your nursing home reimbursement right now is the fact that those residents that could be cared for in a CBRF are not getting cared for in a CBRF. If they were taken out of the nursing home population and cared for in a CBRF, your nursing home Medicaid rate would go up $16.40 a day. Again, because those are the lower acuity people, so what that happens is that drags down the average acuity for the whole facility.
And so what we may find from staff as we're refining these options is actually accelerating a decision on the CBRFs while we're trying to refine the larger issues on the nursing homes and right-sizing that, because there are a number of moving pieces here, but just that increase alone in the Medicaid rate on the remaining clients in the nursing home could really significantly save us if this is part of our long-term solution.
And then just to put a little bit of numbers to each one of the incentives that we talked about, if you were to build a 90-bed nursing home, replacement nursing home, on page 18, the state would reimburse you an additional $22.78 plus $2 for the private room incentive, assuming you built private rooms, for a total of $24.78. The 50-bed facility would be $23.03 plus the $2 private room and a $10 property incentive in addition to that. And the 40 or 50 bed is the $22.88 plus $2. The one thing we don't know right now from the state's calculation is, depending on how the calculation is finalized, that 50 or 40 bed facility may also be eligible for part of that $10 a day property incentive or not. So we've got to wait till those numbers get finalized. But that's kind of when we talk about the state helping you replace your facility, that's really the numbers we're talking about there. On page 19, again, another kind of, I'll say, benefit of being a 50-bed facility. 50-bed facilities get an enhanced nursing care into their rate. Their rate is actually, or their target is actually, increased by 20%. What does that mean for Lakeview? If you were a 50-bed facility today, your Medicaid rate would go up by $19.73 a day. So again, both the 50-bed, but even when we look to combine the 50-bed and a 40-bed, both of those two facilities would also get that $19.73 increase. So that's why we're strategizing. If we want 90 beds, we want it to be a 50-bed and a 40-bed facility, not just a 90-bed facility. page 20, the financing models. And again, these are high-level numbers because obviously we don't have plans and designs, but it does lay out that the number of beds are all beds, so they're nursing home, CBRF, all beds that we'd be building new. Estimated construction cost, the construction loan interest rate is based on general obligation debt. That's why you see the 2.5%. The construction period with some capitalized interest in there. Bottom line is on a 90-bed facility, an either 90-bed facility, debt service of $1.3 million, and then on the 50-bed facility, debt service of about $894,000. And again, those numbers, as Steve mentioned, as we look to refine, those numbers will be refined as we get more available information. On the what's the financial bottom line of it, if you turn to page 21, net loss after operations, you can see option A, $22,293,000, option B, $1,015,000, and option C, $1,497,000. And again, the reason for the difference between A and C is are those the different incentives that those 50-bed facilities would get. Bottom line, cost of the county, $1,961,000 and $2,893,000. As Steve pointed out in our meeting this morning, option A is really more than you're spending today. And Steve, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Please. Right now, our tax levy support between, this doesn't include any MVHS revenues from the other counties. Currently, with what we pay and what other counties pay, the tax levy support from all of the counties is about $3 million. About $1 million in round numbers from other counties, about $2 million from us, whether it be for Western Wisconsin CARES clients or La Crosse County. So in round numbers, this verifies the analysis that option A and staying at that size level is not cost effective. We would need to, if these numbers are correct, enhance our funding by almost $700,000. What it does indicate that on a La Crosse County only, option B, we'd be at a dollar amount that's pretty much what we're spending now and or savings, because we'll be continuing to refine this, or option C, which is sizing to whether or not these other partners are willing to rethink their ability to participate, because so many of the other counties, let me just give you an example, that of those other counties, Crawford, Monroe, Sauk, and Vernon are the lion's share of those other counties, representing on today's census about 27 clients. It may be a different discussion being a regional entity primarily for counties around us. Would they participate on a different level? And or this idea of the associate membership, that if you needed a bed and we had a vacant bed, whether you be from Barron County or Kenosha County or anywhere, but if you had a slightly different per diem because you came from those other counties, we could keep the beds full. So what it does indicate is that option A is not cost effective. B and C will be as refined on the design, the final staffing numbers, and the partnerships with other counties, that it seems that that's a track that we're going down, that the CBRFs that are included in these bed hold numbers would increase our payments enough that we could get new facilities and still be at or lower than our current cost. At least that's the direction that we're able to verify so far in this analysis.
And again, just to give you some numbers with that, option A, Medicaid would give you $40 more a day. Option B, Medicaid would give you $70 more a day, and option C, Medicaid would give you $60 more a day. So that, again, is based on those different options, how much the Medicaid program would kick in to kind of help out. The next slide is just some demo.
Back to this this cost analysis. Our primary source of funding would be like Medicare, Medicaid?
That would be our primary source of the revenue that you see there. The right. Bottom line is property tax.
Yeah,
dollars.
Okay. I'm when we get Medicare, Medicaid, is there rules attached to, you know, we're talking about these other counties. Are they going to send somebody here or not? I mean, does that mean we have the ability to say, no, we're not going to take you? Or if we have an empty bed, by law, are we violating any discrimination law or something?
This isn't my area of expertise, but I believe it's a policy choice that the County Board of La Crosse needs to make. Do we continue to be a regional entity and to continue to provide those services in a new facility that we would build, and or how is that partnership to be? It's a longer discussion about if we downsize and we no longer serve somebody that's already here from another county. There are other experts in the room, Dave or Pam or others, that could talk about what that process would be. But if we build a new facility and you commit to debt service to build that facility, part of the policy discussion will be, who should we be serving? Across county, should we continue to be a regional entity? And that, I believe, is a policy question that this board will have to wrestle with.
I understood that. I just didn't know, and maybe Dave researched that at some future meeting. You're telling me then somebody comes from Milwaukee or Barron County or whatever that isn't in this association, if we have empty beds, we can say no. If you're not sure, just find out for a later meeting, because we're going to meet on this multiple times, but I want to make sure we're not in violation of any discrimination laws where we have to actually accept the client.
I don't think you have to accept anybody. I don't think that would be any violation. I'm just saying, no, I can look into it more.
People with a disability or whatever.
So, Supervisor Geary, are you drawing like an analogy to hospitals where they are required to provide care in certain cases?
Right. And I didn't know when you take federal money, if there's regulations, and if a person is disabled or something, if you can say no to them. So I just, for future date, just research it.
Well, and I also know that there are other counties that only serve their own clients. Rock County is the best example I know of, that when they were unable to find ways to receive payments from other counties before we created this commission idea, they downsized too and currently serve only Rock County, but they're a much larger entity, so they're able to have an economy of scale just serving their own clients.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Geary? Supervisor Veenstra.
On page 21, the financial analysis, the numbers that you're talking, does that include the $10, I guess, bonus or whatever you want to call it or not? And if not, when would we actually find out about that becoming a reality?
It does include it for option B, because based on the analysis that we know that's going to come out, you would qualify for sure. For option C, we're up in the air there, and right now it's not in there. Option B and option C would mirror each other if we got it for both facilities. You'd see that $10 taking the 60 up to 70. As far as when we will know it, the application was supposed to be out the end of November. As of today, it's still not out. We're working on the second draft of the model. I actually sit on the committee working with the state to help outline it. We're hoping that the final application will be ready by the end of February. The process would be as then facilities would apply. The state would take time to review the applications and then would let you know if you were approved or not. So, give you a deadline, I'd say probably the latest would be July 1st, and hopefully sometime before that you actually got approval.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Veenstra? Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 21 as well, we're under total expenses. Approximately how much of that is operational?
The total expenses would be all, because there's no interest or depreciation in there.
Okay, so that's all operational expenses. Yep. All right, so maybe I'm making an incorrect assumption, but when you looked at option C and you described two buildings, I guess my question is, how, according to this matrix, it's going to be less expensive to operate two buildings than it is to operate one building. And my question is why, and I guess I'm making the assumption that staffing costs may increase, administrative costs may increase, and something that doesn't show up in this matrix is how is the care of our clients going to be impacted when we have two buildings versus one?
The real difference is one adult family home versus two. That's why you see the decrease in expenses. Option A has two adult family homes in it because we're serving more than La Crosse County. Option C only has the one adult family home. Otherwise, the expenses, you're right, it would be slightly higher to operate two facilities than it would be one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Other questions?
Last round?
Keep going, Larry. Yep.
All right. On 22, just to give you, again, some census of who we're providing care to. So these are just some of the key assumptions on census levels. Again, remember, 90-bed nursing home, we're looking at a census of 86. A 50-bed, we'd be looking at a census of 48. On the CBRF, we're looking at a total of 40, 32 that would be the two 16 beds and then the one 8-bed with an average census of 35. So just some of that. 23, kind of our next steps for you guys, I guess, is the best way to put it. Obviously, we'll continue to update the financial model as we know more information. That's real crucial with that 50-40 building right now, where we will fall in that and what we will qualify for. Evaluating the cost, and this is something that we have talked to Dean about, evaluating the cost, if those people who we are caring for in a nursing home now are cared for as a CBRF, is there a cost to Health and Human Services? Plan to submit a property incentive application once available to construct a replacement 50-bed and 40-bed nursing home. Again, not jumping the gun, but from that perspective, you definitely don't want to ask for a 50-bed and then try to add a 40-bed into your application. You're much better to ask for both and then say we just decided not to do the 40-bed. The application has no binding to you as a healthcare provider. You could do the application and get the approval and later say, no, we're not going to go forward. But it's nice to have that approval in your hand when you decide to go forward with the project and not have to wait to get approval. And then, obviously, request that both facilities be designated as 50-bed facilities if we decide to do the 50-40-bed split, which we talked about the benefits of that. Assuming approval is received for the Department of Health to evaluate, assuming you get approved for the 50-40, then, you, as Steve said, you have to evaluate the 40-bed. We really call that the MVHS building. That's the building that would serve as additional clients other than La Crosse, and what kind of, you know, contribution or expectation would you have from those counties to help either with the construction costs or, you know, as Mike mentioned, bed hold, something to help with that project. Obviously, the risk of that over time, as we saw with Lakeview today, as the need goes down and you start to have fewer patients, you don't want to build something that's going to have empty beds somewhere in the future. If you're unable to approve the 50-bed dual approval, then pretty much, to me, the 50-40 bed probably goes out because it's not as – then you're back to the 90-bed option, if you really want to say. And then you're probably best off as a county to say we're going to service the La Crosse County residents and move forward with option B. Lots of – and then, again, just so we don't lose track of it, you know, the Ravenwood piece, we put that in there. That's, again, something to evaluate. Again, is that a service you want to be in? And or not, and really the one of the keys there is access to psychiatric services for that facility. And then the last one, and again just our recommendation, is looking at an architect firm, construction management company, to kind of get that piece of the ball rolling also. That will obviously help refine the construction cost question as you start to look at design and know what you're actually designing. So
Supervisor Geary, this may be your last time I call in tonight, just saying.
That'll never happen. But anyway.
Who has the gavel?
There's meetings and meetings. Okay, back to that 50 and 40. I'm assuming we have the same nursing home administrator for both, right?
Correct.
Okay. On that census analysis, you had 35 people from other counties. Can you build a 50 or whatever, 50 for just La Crosse County only, and the other building is for outside of La Crosse County only?
Well, that's what we were talking. You would certify that as your MVHS building? Yes.
Because it'd be easiest for us to identify costs to how to bill it back, because you'd always keep it segregated that way.
Yep.
So that was the intent of the 50-40, was the out-of-county would take the 40 or...
And realize the 40 doesn't have to be 40. Maybe you don't get as much commitment and it becomes 50-30. You know, it isn't set in stone that it would be 40.
It's your lucky day, Supervisor Geary. That wasn't really a question. It was a statement. So I may, in fact, call on you again tonight if you raise your hand. Other questions or comments from supervisors? Okay. Thank you, Larry. I think we'll pass it back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
So there are a number of key things going on with... I'm sorry.
Do you have a question of Larry?
No, actually it was... Well, in the whole process, so when does the site analysis, since obviously that has some effect since I represent District 25.
I think Mr. O'Malley's going to talk about next steps. So if he doesn't answer your question, we'll
that's correct.
Come back to it.
There are a number of things happening on site, on right-sizing staffing, on even refining some of the numbers on census. So let me walk through a number of them just to touch on all of them. Now that we know that we can't be the same size that we are at, that it's likely at the largest somewhere around option C, we've got some basic idea of what the footprint might look like. And so the next steps are Larry and Jim Spropoulos and HSR are working on what that means. And in the next week or so, we should have some preliminary ideas about options being located either at the Hillview campus or at the Lakeview campus. The problem area, of course, is regardless of just what we think in this room or outside this room, is that there's the issue about being on a contiguous campus. There are certain restrictions on that the state may end up restricting our ability to even make that policy choice. So we're evaluating that starting from the physical aspect and then the policy aspect about how far we pursue co-location. It's a different discussion if it's only one facility of 50 beds and it's separated by a street. It's a different discussion if it's all three of the facilities, the CBRFs, the 40-bed, and the 50-bed, would be a much tighter fit on the Hillview campus, even with a road. So you're going to weigh in on that as an elected body when we bring that back without specific recommendations but about the choices. So that's on site. That'll be at a future meeting. The second piece that's being refined by your staff is trying to analyze the staffing level that's actually necessary. There have been a number of site visits that are going on. Wanda Placecki, your administrator, is actually on vacation this week. That's why she's not here. But staff are going to other facilities that have similar types of structure, neighborhood types of facilities, and trying to evaluate and refine some of the expense numbers on what are the staff number of positions. So that's the second piece. And the third piece, then, is try to evaluate, is there a step process that we can go into? Do we start out with the CBRF and actually increase our process right now, build those right away as we're refining these other items? And then there was one other item that I just lost track of was the the adult family home is actually small. The fourth one, which is the most exciting, is getting a handle on what the true demand is for the non-La Crosse County-only beds. At the last month's meeting of the MVHS, we expanded something called an associate membership. Now, what does that mean? Right now, we're tied to only the other 12 counties that are members. Other than the counties that I mentioned, the ones that are closest, it's very hit or miss whether or not we get a client from another county. So what the MVHS board did last month was to say to any county in the state of Wisconsin, if you want to place a person here, you don't have to join right away. You can place a person here. If we meet your needs, we can meet that client's needs, and you will just pay a slightly higher per diem, 50% higher per diem than those members. If you like our service and you've been pleased with it and you want to then join and pay the $5,000, you can then apply to be a permanent member. You'll get the same per diem rate, but then we've been able to market an empty bed to another county in the state. Instead of just this ones or twos that right now, we've got a number of commission members that don't have a need for a client, Outagamie, Rock, a couple of others. If we are able to maintain census hold by marketing ourselves to all 72 counties, we may find a more stabilized level. So there are a number of exciting options that are going on to not just have us make a bet on building these MVHS beds, because remember, right-sizing this also impacts the number of staff that we have for this. By drastically downsizing, it changes the number of staff we would have 2 or 3 years out when we actually occupy. So we're trying to do a number of things at once. So there's a whole lot of information that's going to build on what you have here that's going to give you better data to make decisions about site, about sizing, about co-location, and really about the next steps, about that we don't have to buy a whole decision at once. We can step into it in processes, starting with CBRF and then building from there. So there are a number of those items that will come back through this body, through the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, as you're not going to get one set of package of make these decisions tonight. It's going to walk that through, and you're going to end up making those decisions as the board.
Anything else on next steps?
I'll take a deep breath. And
I'm not going to comment because I'll get in trouble. Any other questions of Mr. O'Malley or the presenters? If not, thank you both, Mike and Larry, for presenting. Anything else, Mr. O'Malley, on this? Okay. Suggestions for future agenda topics. Just a quick reminder, my apologies for any confusion that there was about the performance appraisal process for Mr. O'Malley, but a reminder that this Friday is the deadline for those to be returned to my office, please. Pardon? The performance appraisal for Mr. O'Malley, for the county administrator, deadline is Friday. Thank you to those who have a nice stack of them up here this evening who turned them in. Yes. They went out in an email, I believe, Alice. I never introduced Alice. We have a new administrative assistant in the county board chair's office who I hope went home a long time ago because I was going to introduce her at the beginning of the meeting and I failed to remember to do that. So I hope that you will come upstairs and introduce yourself to her. She's at all the committee meetings this week. So Alice Sorensen is her name. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it'd be important to send an email out on new employees so that we, you know, naturally remember the name and have the, I guess, better understanding of what position she's taken over and whoever other employees are. I think it's very important to get that information.
So are you saying countywide or just in our office?
I think department heads, any changes in staffing, I mean, I think it's important to be informed.
Okay.
But especially this position, I think I was looking for an email being I knew somebody was coming on board, but I think that would have been important to have that. But she was here, but she left at the beginning.
Excellent suggestion. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder. Supervisor Meyer.
I didn't get any evaluation for Mr. O'Malley, and Dave didn't either.
Okay.
Either mail or email.
I think there was an email that actually went out today from the aforementioned Alice Sorensen, who is the new administrative assistant in the county board chair's office, that that had an attachment with the form. About 2 o'clock this afternoon it went out. So Friday is the deadline, and my apologies for the confusion in that process. It's good that Alice is on board to help prevent other confusion in the future, hopefully. And with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by... I did, a long time ago. Supervisor Ebert.
Under future agenda, down at WCA, they were talking about pay studies and stuff. And we just need to get going on, at the end of the year, we have no union contracts. And if we keep diddling around, all of a sudden, it's going to be too late. So I think that at some point, we have to start getting our stuff in one sock for that... that eventuality at the end of the year, because otherwise we're going to be caught with budget and everything else, and I just think we need to do that.
So perhaps we will maybe more broadly just talk about next steps as we end those contracts and what hear from the county administrator and from the personnel department on what the plan is, what the timeline is. Thank you. Other future agenda items, since some people didn't hear me ask for them before. Now I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Supervisor Schultz, seconded by Supervisor Ferries. All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned with the thanks of the chair.